When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
One of the battles I face with every one of these Thunder Punch Daily microcasts is how earnest and vulnerable I'm going to allow myself to be. And I know I'm not always successful in that battle. There are plenty of times where I can hear myself chicken out of expressing something that is just coming straight from the gut, a reaction, even something with like a little bit of emotional honesty that I have chewed on for a while. You know, it's a dangerous, or not dangerous, anxiety-inducing business navigating the line between one's professional persona, I guess, and who one really is. And in some of the Thunder Punch Daily, or not the Art Sound Off Challenge, by the way, artsoundoff.com, where a bunch of different artists are sharing, you know, daily reflections on the stuff that they're working on, artsoundoff.com, you can follow them all. This has been addressed in some of the past Art Sound Off challenges. Owen Jolins actually did one on how he conducts himself online and had a lot of interesting thoughts about it. And a lot of thoughts that I tend to agree with. But the other thing that I think, you know, there's a couple of little things in here, and I'm building a point here. I still haven't learned how to like actually lead with my headline and then get to my darned point. But One of the things that I'm always, you know, trying to grow as an artist is learning how to also express emotional honesty, not only through my work, but in my interactions with people. And the problem with that is that you never know, or it's tricky to know when you are, like, what your motivation is for being emotionally honest. Are you doing it to express something? Are you doing it to help someone? Or are you doing it just to sound off? Are you doing it just like, you know, as Merlin Mann called it, yelling at the TV? And that's the thing for me. Like, the cardinal sin for me is yelling at the TV. Although I understand why people do it. I understand the emotional need for it. Just from my own personal ethos, it's something I really don't allow myself to do. It's akin to like yelling at a loved one in a public space kind of thing. That's how it feels to me. Like, when you see that happening, you're just like, oh. But that's a societal norm thing, and that may be me being stuffy. I don't know. That's another thing I got to unbox. Man, maybe I should go to therapy one of these days. there was some emotional honesty right there. I was wondering that aloud in public. So why am I even talking about this? Because Ashley Knapp, Control-Alt-Lee is her username on Audio Boom. She did an Art Sound Off, I think it was on November 10th. I will link to it in the show notes, where she had a casual line in there that was a trigger phrase for me. So I want to make this clear. This is not me responding directly to Ashley or challenging her on her thoughts, but more of Ashley said something casually that made me go, ooh, that makes me bristle. Why does that make me bristle? So I thought about it and I wrote down some things on some note cards. And the line that she said is, she started talking about how part of her art day was involved with playing Skyrim, a video game. And she explains why she continues to play video games, because as she observed, a lot of cartoonists report that they have less and less time for video games. I am one of those cartoonists who say that, you know, I really just cannot find the time to sit down and play games as much as I would like to. And so she explains why it's still a very important part of her life and how she makes time for it. And then she concludes with, and here comes the trigger phrase, she says, that was my desperate attempt to justify why I play video games. And it was followed by a chuckle. It was a casual thing, but it made me react. And so, and I want to say to Ashley, to further explain my position on this, as a guy who in mixed company meaning being around people who aren't artists necessarily, as a guy who has shut down conversations when somebody has the misfortune of mentioning 80s cartoons or cartoons in general or cartoon storytelling in general, because he'll get so excited and get so revved up about all of the minutia that he thinks about in terms of these things. As a guy who can quiet a room with that kind of stuff, I hear you. Sometimes we feel like, ooh, maybe this behavior, activity, and you know, way of approaching our entertainment can seem weird to other people. And so maybe we do feel like we need to justify. But okay, so let's start with the big thing that I'm reacting to. The obvious reaction for me, like the from the hip, anybody's going to say this reaction is, do we even need to justify what brings us balance and center? Yes, there are things that, you know, are morally reprehensible. And but then those are unjustifiable, right? Like if you're like beating up animals to bring you center and balance, you got a problem and you can't justify it. Okay, so then do we even need to justify things that aren't harming anybody else? If we're doing something that brings no harm to anybody else, why do we even need to justify it? That's the obvious attack on that kind of reaction that I'm having, right? And then I'll follow up with this. If the activity includes a reflection or some kind of active thinking process, some kind of benefit, as Ashley described when she's playing video games, she described the benefits she gets from it, then it's justified. You know, don't need to explain it. You just do it because you want to do it. And it reminded me also of something Ryan Estrada.com, has said a bunch of times on the Lean Into Artcast and elsewhere. As he talks about this idea that he explored in his graphic novel, online comic book, whatever you want to call it. It was a comic, people. You know, the Broken Telephone comic. And he said that everyone feels like they're the hero of their own story. Because true, we live entirely in our own heads and we can only put together our assessment of the world based on our own experiences and senses, right? And then he's also said, is sort of like a supplemental point to that, is that I'm paraphrasing him now. This is not a direct quote, but he said something along the lines of everyone feels like they need to or want to justify their choices. You know, well, brings up the question, why? Why do I think we do that? Because I am one of those guys too, right? Like, I want to explain why I like the things I like so much. I've done countless hours of podcasting to that effect. And I do think, you know, I almost started justifying, but this leads me to thinking about, you know, why do we want this? Do we want validation? Sure. Who doesn't? We want to be recognized for the things that we worked hard on. That's a perfectly human thing, and I don't think anybody should be penalized for wanting other people to go, hey, that's neat. I think that that's just part of, that might even be in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Just like somebody reflecting back at you that you did something that positively, it was received positively, right? Or, and this is where I start getting worked up, is because we feel defensive. You know, no one else is doing this thing that I'm doing. I must be wrong. There must be something wrong with me. Because when I start talking about, you know, the fact that, you know, that newscaster in all the Sunbow cartoons, Hector Ramirez, showed up in Transformers and G.I. Joe and in Humanoids. And it was really cool that the writers did that kind of weird crossover. The fact that Marissa Faribault in Transformers Season 3 is the daughter, or is implied to be the daughter, of Flint-Yel Faribault from G.I. Joe. Isn't that cool that they did that? The fact that I care a lot more about that than a lot of people, maybe that means there's something wrong with me, right? Like, that's like a normal kind of thought. It doesn't consume me, but it's one of those kind of fleeting thoughts that like hit you in the brain and kind of like lead you down weird paths. So, and again, this can be helpful, right? Like, I follow a lot of feminist blogs and people who tweet about feminism, and I'm learning through hearing the experiences of women and how they react and how it feels to hear certain things from men, I'm realizing that, wow, you know, check my privilege. There's a whole bunch of things that I've done in the past that were probably coming out of a sense of the fact that I am a white guy and I got to say those things without anybody questioning them. And then the moment somebody said, you know what, when people say things like that, it makes us feel this way. Holy cow. It helps me recontextualize my behavior and help me readjust so as to be hopefully a more healthy and, you know, wholesome person, right? So that can be helpful, but it can also be dangerous, because if you're sitting there going like, oh, you know, this thing that I really give a darn about. Nobody else seems to give a darn about. There must be something wrong with me. I think about a concrete example is subtweets. You know, you see people tweeting on Twitter like, "Dear person who does such and such all the time, please stop it, signed all of us." And I used a voice when I did that because I'm kind of being mildly snarky about it. I shouldn't have been snarky about it now that I think about it. Because there's this fleeting, quick 2-second thought, and I don't know if this happens to anybody else, but it happens to me every once in a while, where I'll see that and I'll be like, "Oh, I wonder if they're talking about me. I wonder if they're talking about something I did. I wonder if I've ever done that thing that irritates them so much. Why would that bother me so much? Why would that bother me that somebody else anonymously kind of said that this behavior bugs me? If it's something that wasn't actually hurting anybody. Dear guy who wears brown pants, please stop it, signed all of us." Right? Oh, I got brown pants. Is that bad? It's a different thing if it's not actually, inflicting harm on anybody else. And so, but then I round back. I'm like, why did I react that way? Why do I feel bad about reacting that way? Because I don't feel good about going like, "Oh, I wonder if that was me." Because it points to self-absorption, right? It ain't about you, Jers. It ain't about you when somebody subtweets. And, well, I guess it could be. But even then, if you're not doing anything that harmed anybody, why does it matter that somebody else disapproves of that particular thing? And then I think that, again, it's that sounding off and yelling at the television thing again. It's just somebody expressing themselves. Somebody is, I don't know what their, what experiences and alignments and attitudes all coalesced into that moment where they express themselves that way. You know, sometimes people just say things, and I've seen this happen quite a few times on Twitter, where I detect somebody is mad about something else. And the trigger was this event that they're responding to, because the way they responded to it clearly indicated that they hadn't thought about it too clearly. It was just like a sort of like a quick reaction to it, like, "Oh, blah, whatever," kind of thing. And if it's somebody just expressing themselves, and if I don't know the context of what led up to that expression, then how can I make an informed decision on how to react to that, right? So there's a pointlessness to it. Not only is it like a self-absorption that bothers me, but personally, when my own reactions happen, but there's a pointlessness to even lending cycles to that. And then, as is my habit, I tend to extend thoughts all the way out to and I don't know if this is Rob Stenzinger, if you're listening, I'm hoping you can weigh in on this. Is this a cognitive fallacy? Is that I tend to extend out to like worst case scenarios whenever I'm thinking about these kinds of philosophical wonderings about being a creative person. When I was a kid, I had a friend, and this is not like me talking about myself as a friend, but I really did have a friend who was a very nervous person, and whenever they did anything, they would frantically justify why they did the thing that they did. "Oh, I did it this way because on Tuesday I had grilled cheese sandwich and I thought about it this way, and that's why I did it." And it really felt almost like they either felt guilty or aggrieved about everything. And here's where I build to my final, worst case scenario point. In thinking about that friend for years and years, because I remember it just made me uncomfortable all the time. And even as like a 10-year-old, I was like, "Why are you so worked up about this? I don't care why you did it. And you didn't bother me with it. So why are you explaining it?" Because even if they did something good, even if they did something that nobody cared about, they would frantically justify it. And what are we doing when we're justifying something? We're responding, I think, to some imagined authority. "Oh, everybody else is doing this and I'm not. There must be something wrong with me." We're granting the everybody else that kind of authority in the situation. And I get nervous about granting authority to somebody who I haven't actively or explicitly granted that authority, right? If I find myself responding to an imagined or implicit authority, then I got to stop and wonder what I'm doing there. And I think about the people that I've known in my life who don't spend a lot of time justifying their choices. They just do it because they like it and they receive benefit from it. If you ask them about the benefit, they can tell you, but they don't lead with that. They always seem like they don't have a whole lot of problem with authority. They don't have like they have like a kind of a healthy relationship of where the lines are between them and authority. That's my boxed up observation on that. It's kind of like it's as a personal anecdote. I just went out to lunch with a friend the other day. It didn't make it into the journal microcast because it seemed like a fleeting moment that didn't require much reflection, but it actually ties into this one. Friend emails me and he's like, "Hey, let's meet for lunch at this place in Ann Arbor." And I go over there, and it's this sausage meat place where there was literally nothing I could eat there, and it smelled great. I can tell you, as a vegetarian, I do it for ethical reasons. I still remember how delicious animal parts were. And I do miss them from time to time, like especially like spiced meats, like salami, pastrami, corned beef. Oh my gosh, so good! So when I get there, I'm looking around, and my friend's like, "What can you have here? Or what are you going to get?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't think I'm going to get anything. I think I'm just going to get something to drink." And I said, "You know, I'm a vegetarian, right?" And he got, you know, kind of apologetic about it. Like, "Oh, had I known, I wouldn't have suggested this place." I'm like, "It's no big deal. I don't lead with that because I don't think it's necessary to explain to people my ethical choices. You know, I want you to like me and like hanging out with me because of who I am, not because I'm giving you some kind of reportage on why I'm a good guy or why I think I'm a good guy, right?" It, when it comes up, but it's not something I lead with because it's not important information. Besides, I had something nice to drink. It was fine. And when I go out with friends, there's usually a salad. It's not a big deal. But then, yeah, and like I think about like the preachier vegetarians that I've known where I get what they're doing. They've made an ethical choice and they feel that it's better for all involved. But, you know, I guess the thing to examine there is what's their motivation for doing it. My motivation is that I made this choice for me, and I'll be darned if I'm going to try to explicitly tell somebody else how to conduct their lives unless they're doing something to hurt somebody else. There's my simplistic view on it. And I think I've gone on long enough about this. So who am I? Jersey Drozd, comicsaregreat.com, boulderandfleet.com, leanintoart.com. This microcast is recorded as part of the Art Sound Off Challenge, where a bunch of different visual storytellers are collecting their thoughts on a daily basis for the month of November 2014. You can check out all of them by going to artsoundoff.com or the Art Sound Off hashtag on Twitter. That's where everybody's sharing their reflections. So lots and lots of audio content if you're looking for something to listen to during the day. The voiceover for this episode was by Tara Platt of bugbotpress.com. The music was by my brother, Elliot Drozd of elliotdrozd.com. And the audio hosting, if you're listening to this in a podcatcher on some kind of mobile device, it was provided by Kablam, kablam.com, the one-stop printing solution for the independent comics publisher. So I'll be back tomorrow with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember everybody.
Helping his dragon friend sure kept He-Man busy today. And Brindle's tests were pretty tough. In one of those tests to prove his courage, he was challenged to a fight, but He-Man wouldn't fight.
The fact is, fighting never proves anything. Trying to find a peaceful way to settle a problem is usually the best way. And if someone calls you a coward or a chicken, don't let it worry you. It often takes more courage not to fight. Until later, bye now.